So apparently the appellant's attorney is still in Woodbury, Minnesota on a conference call. We're going to hear this matter. Mr. Zimmerman, do you wish to present any arguments? We've read the briefs. We're familiar with them.
Certainly, Your Honor. I'll make a brief argument on behalf of Mr. Schumacher.
Okay. Please come to the podium, and when you begin, you'll have 15 minutes if you choose to use it all. And state your name for the record when you begin.
It is the court. My name is Dean Zimmerly. I'm here with the respondent, Mr. Francis Schumacher, and also cross appellant on this matter. The heart of this dispute is over the ownership of about 55 acres of real estate in Nicollet County. And the issue before the court is whether a person who receives an assignment of a statutory right of redemption, which on its face is unambiguous and unconditional, and then pays the $165,000 redemption amount to exercise that right of redemption, whether that person becomes the owner of the property under Minnesota law.
I have a question for you. Both you and the appellant's lawyer and my own research have not found any Minnesota cases that are directly on point on this point. And so if we were to publish, what would the solace point be?
I think my issue statement right there, except reversed, Your Honor, that a person that receives an assignment of redemption rights that's unconditional and unambiguous on its face, and then pays the redemption amount to the foreclosing creditor, becomes the owner of the property.
So then what do we make of the two contemporaneously filed certificates of redemption that seem to indicate that, in fact, Ms. Stevenson had been the party to redeem and presumably then the owner of this property? I just wonder, it seems to me that you make an argument that the certificate of redemption is clear on its face, and I can understand that argument, but then how do we square that with the contrary information in the two certificates? A redemption filed with the county recorder in New Jersey.
Yes, Your Honor. I think the fact that certificate of redemption states that KMLE redeemed that property is, I don't think, actually important to determining ownership for two reasons. First is because by taking this assignment, by receiving this assignment, all of KMLE's statutory rights of redemption have been assigned. All those benefits have been assigned to Mr. Schumacher. He steps into the shoes of KMLE. So any benefit flowing to KMLE essentially flows through to Mr. Schumacher. And second, I think this is basically more or less what the district court concluded, is by operation of law, by the redemption of Mr. Schumacher following that assignment, it was in fact Mr. Schumacher that redeemed the property. ProGrowth Bank can't change that fact any more than by publishing what I think, or by executing what maybe could be characterized as a mistaken certificate, any more than they could assign that property by putting my name on that certificate. I certainly didn't redeem, and I wouldn't be the owner if they were to put that on here. The fact of the matter is that Mr. Schumacher redeemed following that redemption, and I think there's essentially no dispute in the record about that fact, that Mr. Schumacher was in fact the one that paid the money and redeemed.
But don't the two redemption certificates, I understand that argument, don't they support the appellant's assertion that this transaction between your client and the appellant was in the nature of a loan and not a purchase? Because, the redemption thing suggested that Ms. Stevenson still had some ownership.
Well, I think it maybe as a practical matter, Your Honor, I don't know that we can read that much into the certificate of redemption. I mean, that was prepared by the bank's attorney and probably had no idea one way or the other that this assignment.
Client's lawyer filed. I mean, not you, but somebody else representing your client.
Certainly, and that was almost a decade before we were representing Mr. Schumacher in this matter. So I don't know that that fact in particular really has any bearing on the ultimate conclusion. As a practical matter, I don't know that Mr. Bregelman would have had any way to know about this. And I mean, I guess if I had been representing Mr. Schumacher at the time, I maybe would have recommended that the assignment read something along the lines of redeemed by Mr. Schumacher as assignee for CAMLE. But I mean, that wasn't the case, and I don't know that we can read into the certificate that this supports the concept of some sort of loan. You know, before I get too much further into this, I just want to address a few things that were raised in kind of the reply brief. There was three arguments kind of raised in the reply brief that I don't think we have had an opportunity to brief directly. And these are arguments that an assignment of redemption rights, or excuse me, statutory redemption rights cannot be assigned relying on the U.S. Bank v. RBP Realty case. A reference to the Home Ownership and Equity Protection Act being violated, and an argument about equitable mortgage. I mentioned that we haven't briefed these issues, and the reason for that is they weren't raised until the reply brief. So I don't believe they're properly before the court, and I mean, even if they were raised in their initial brief, they weren't raised below, never decided below. But just for the sake of, addressing all those points kind of in particular, I think this U.S. Bank case doesn't actually say anything along the lines of redemption rights cannot be assigned. That involved an agreement between a borrower and a lender following default to waive, before the foreclosure, any redemption right. And this court found that you can't waive prospectively that statutory right of redemption because that's effectively shortening the statutory right of redemption, less than the 6 months that they're entitled to. It says nothing along the lines or regarding whether or not a redemption right can be assigned later by the borrower, after the foreclosure, which is what happened in this case. So, and there's other cases that suggest that an assignment, in fact, that a statutory right of redemption is, in fact, a real property right, which, like any of the real property right, should be able to be freely assigned and alienated by the owner. And Minnesota's foreclosure statutes also suggest that the mortgagor or the mortgagor's assigns can redeem. So I think it recognizes that there can be assignments of that redemption right. Regards to the Home Ownership and Equity Protection Act, when I started reading this act and reading the statutes, it was a little bit perplexing why this was even brought up. When you start reading the definitions about what this applies to and regulates, I mean, it regulates a foreclosure reconveyance agreement. And if you read the definition, this is an agreement made during the foreclosure, a transfer during the foreclosure, to allow the transferee to redeem as a junior creditor. Now, Francis didn't redeem as a junior creditor. There was no transfer during the foreclosure. Now, the foreclosure purchaser specifically excludes individuals who know the person with whom they're dealing. Well, the record clearly supports that Mr. Schumacher knew the appellants for decades. And finally, I'm not even sure that CAMLE could be a foreclosed homeowner, because this only covers someone that's whose property is being foreclosed as the primary residence. I don't know that a corporation under Minnesota law can have a primary residence, being kind of an ephemeral legal entity. It doesn't reside really anywhere, other than, perhaps it's a place of business for purpose of jurisdiction.
Does it make a difference that this is a family LLC?
Your Honor, it might. I don't know that the court would even have to go that far, because the first two definitions about what this applies to is that I think is absolutely clear.
Bottom line, I guess my fundamental question, what consideration did the appellants receive for, in fact, losing their property? Or selling their property at less than its fair market value?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that with respect to a real estate conveyance, no consideration is actually required. I think Minnesota law recognizes that you can convey without any consideration whatsoever rights and property.
You're trying to characterize this as a purchase, and so I guess my question is, what did they get? The seller, in this case, get out of this deal?
Well, at the point in time when this was actually transferred, the property had already been foreclosed. If they hadn't been able to come up with funds to redeem this several months later, there was nothing left of their property, and they'd have been evicted by the bank. The bank would have become the sole owner and presumably would have moved to enforce its rights as the sole owner after foreclosing. So, I mean, they have, if nothing else, received the fact that the bank wouldn't have received it, and that at the time a close personal friend would have received this. So I think
they lived on that in the residence, in the dwelling, all of these people.
In fact, they have lived in residence. Our position is that was kind of that was basically an exchange going forward. Living on the residence was basically an exchange for maybe some work done on the property. So I think that would be also the consideration that, at least for the time being, they weren't kicked off of the property. So they had the ability to not see that piece of land be lost to the bank forever.
Emma, a question for you about another argument that was made in the reply brief on page 1. Appellant argues that the assignment was invalid as it was provided by an administratively dissolved corporation, and they claim that the corporation was dissolved in April 2005, and can you address that?
Sure, and I don't know that we've actually addressed this correctly in our briefs. If you look at the case law regarding administratively dissolved corporations, it basically says, the statute in the case law, I think, is a fair paraphrase to say the shareholders lose the protection of the corporate, can lose the protection of the corporate shield when it's administratively dissolved. But this doesn't void third parties that are dealing with that corporation. And in fact, once that corporation is reinstated, which occurred in this case, all of those transactions that occurred during the period of administrative dissolution are basically retroactively verified, made whole, unvoided, whatever word you want to use for it.
Can you remind me when it was reinstated?
In 2016, around the commencement of the lawsuit, there's another statute in Minnesota law that provides that a dissolved corporation, I believe, can't pursue a lawsuit, if I'm remembering correctly. So I think in relation to this lawsuit, it was reinstated.
Okay, thank you.
Unless the court has any other further arguments of me, I think I'd rest on the briefs for the remainder of the issues before the court, and ask that, except for the Mr. Schumacher's breach of contract claim related to rent, except for that claim, that the district court decision be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you.